Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Cultured or Nah. As you know, I'm your host, Shubnam, and I'm super excited to have this conversation today. At Cultured or Nah, we're fans of laziness, and we're always here to talk about some historical facts and, of course, some uncultured opinions. So I'm very excited to welcome with me today Roshni Patel Vasram and Divya Suneji. So thank you guys so much for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
So this is going to be a really interesting conversation and something a little bit different from what we've done on Cultured or Not before. The aim of today's conversation is to talk about South Asian brands that amplify other South Asian brands. And I think if you've been on Instagram or TikTok or Twitter anytime in the last 5 years, you've seen an explosion of South Asian content overall. But Unfortunately, these things don't happen in isolation. Usually brands need to support other brands, accounts need to support other accounts, and we really need to get the word out collectively. And I think one of the things that we don't talk about enough actually is the role of the community when it comes to both community building and brand building in the South Asian diaspora, which is why I thought this was an important conversation to have, to invite on two accounts that actually are doing the hard work of amplifying brown voices and calling a lot of attention to not only just issues, but also entertainment news, just different types of art that's available, different types of categories of issues that we should be speaking about. So I'll jump into some really quick intros for the two people I have on. Roshni Patel Vasram is the founder of UrbanAsian.com. She runs a PR company called Miss Roshni along with Urban Asian. She has a master's in integrated marketing communications from Michigan. And Urban Asian also has a subparent called Urban Asian Music, which is a record label company that collaborates with different South Asian artists around the world to produce music in different genres. Divya Suneji believes in activism through art, music, and amplifying voices of people whose issues may not always get the airtime that they deserve. She runs a page called South Asian Nation, which deals with issues within the diaspora and the homeland communities, and especially works to amplify marginalized voices as part of their platform. So I'm very, very excited to have both of you on today. And I think right off the top, I would just love if you guys could, maybe in your own words, tell me a little bit more about yourselves, your accounts, your businesses, what led you to start them? And I guess, like, what are the things that inspire you and what, like, are you hoping to achieve with your brand? I know that's like a lot of questions at once, but I guess, like, tell me about you, your journey as a founder, what led you to create the account that you have, to create the businesses that you have, and what is the inspiration behind it all?
So I guess I'll go first. So I started Urban Asian in October of 2010 with a few guys who are based out of Los Angeles. And I come from a media family. My father was a pioneer of Indian radio in the Tampa Bay area. He was a film distributor. So I kind of followed into his footsteps. I was meant to go into medical school and pursue pharmacy, as every Indian parent wants them to, you know, wants their child to go into the medical field. I decided to change my major into business. And then I was given an opportunity to be a director of new media for a company called Composite, which was in New York City. And I ran the online street team. We had about 1,000 college street team kids around the United States that were promoting songs for like Raghav, Jay Sean, Sona Family, DJ Caper. There was a lot of people back then that were trying to produce music and they didn't have a platform. There was no social media. It was Friendster, MySpace. I mean, I'm sure those names are super old school for you guys, but like they were valued during that time when I was in college. So I was in charge of running the campaigns for that. And I learned a lot from my mentor, Jay Gatsby, who I still speak to till today. He was a former Bad Boy promotions manager for P. Diddy. So, you know, I really enjoyed it, especially since my father was in the media space as well. And thereafter, the company kind of fell apart and everybody went their own ways. But a lot of people in the United Kingdom were saying, hey, how are we going to promote our music? Like, there's no person in the United States that's helping us promote our music and building shows. And I mean, we were one of the first ones to help with Jay Sean reaching the billboards. I don't know if you remember that that time, which was a big deal.
Yeah, I do remember that was a big deal. And that was like in high school, that was such a big, and now I'm giving my age away by being like in high school. But in high school, that was like such a big South Asian moment because when he reached the billboards, people kept talking about how like finally a South Asian artist was like, there was that representation. And I would argue that maybe Jay Sean was actually what I would consider the first form of mainstream representation that I think I can remember like us having actually in the US.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a big deal because, you know, when, you know, J.C. Hitz was around, Jay Gatsby and me and a whole bunch of other people said, this guy's getting signed to bat to, you know, one of the biggest labels under Lil Wayne. And it was a big deal. And the college kids were like eager to see him. So I was in charge of saying, hey, go out, promote the concert, promote the song, use blurbs, go on Friendster, post on MySpace. I mean, there was a lot of information to be posted on social media so the colleges could see it. And thereafter, we ended up doing a Jay Sean tour and that became successful. I mean, it was a lot of great experience, especially for me. I learned a lot on the business side, but then there was a lot of hiccups around, you know, down the road, but it was fun. You know, you get to learn a lot.
It sounds like it was very like grassroots, like right from the get-go, right?
I was going to use that word. Yeah. Grassroots. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So it was interesting. And so I did that for a few years. Company fell apart. Like I said, Urban Asian started 3 years after I left Composite, or the company demolished. And I ended up meeting two of my friends in LA, Aman and Amr and John, who's also not Indian. And we decided, let's open up UrbanAsian.com. The boys had already registered the name. And I said, okay, sure. Because I started Miss Roshni blog, but I was just doing it for fun. I was writing articles because, again, the people in the UK didn't have a platform to promote their music. And I had already had connections to all the radio stations, to the college teams and whatnot. So I just did it for fun. And then one day the boys were like, why don't we just kind of, you know, use you and then use us? We've got the Hollywood connections. You've got the Bollywood connection because of your father. You know the music industry as well. So we partnered up and we formed Urban Asian. And today it's been 10 years. So yeah, that's my story.
That's awesome. That's super interesting. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Divya, do you want to go next?
Yeah, sure. So... well, I would start from when I moved here, because that's when everything changed. The culture, not so much, because I grew up in a metropolitan city. So when I moved here, I didn't miss a lot. You know, when I moved here, but also I felt sick for about like 6 months straight. Mm-hmm. So during that time, I wanted to, you know, do something, you know, I wanted to create some sort of a platform which talks about a lot of awareness around the community and connect the, you know, bridge that gap between the diaspora as well as homeland. Because when I came here, I kind of realized that people are cultured, but they don't know much about the grassroots problems and, you know, the culture as a whole. And because I also come from, you know, a backward class in India. So where people, you know, casteism is a huge issue. Mm-hmm. And here, when we came here, I realized that here as well, people do talk about caste and people, you know, discriminate other people on the basis of caste. So these were one of the few things that, you know, I told myself that I'm going to start something which would not just help educate people, but also help in, you know, starting the conversations around the problems that we have within our community. But then I met a couple of other girls and we started, you know, South Asian Nation. And to begin with, it was South Asian Tribe. But we received a lot of, like I said, received a lot of, you know, feedback from people that tribe is a very indigenous word and we should not be using it. So, you know, after receiving all that feedback, we changed it to nation to make it a very umbrella term for all the South Asian nations and talk about them. So also the communities which are, you know, all around the world, be it Africa, South Africa, Australia, US, UK, India, everywhere. And so also, again, I'm from Delhi. I know everything about the north part of India, but I don't know the languages. That there are 126 or however many languages in India alone. And then there were other countries that I wanted to cover as well. So I started talking to people who would like to share content voluntarily on the basis of, you know, their background. So I got in touch with a girl who's from Pakistan who would share content from ground level for the page. And then there was a girl who was from Caribbean, so she was Indo-Caribbean. Then there is another girl, she's a doctor, but also she's from Africa. And there's a huge community of South Asians in Africa as well. And then how our the marginalized community is so similar to the Black community. And, you know, I think the page not just talks about the marginalized communities, but it also talks about colorism, which is a huge issue even now. And we see the dark skin tones being represented now instead of, you know, back in 2016 or 17. So it's not that long ago that we didn't even have representation like that. So we started with, you know, talking to a lot of content creators through Instagram. And one of them was Seema Hari. I'm pretty sure everyone has heard of her. And she's a great activist. She's someone that I really look up to for her voice and the person that she is. And not just that, but, you know, overall, there's so many things that goes on the ground, grassroots level, and things that I grew up with, the problems that I grew up with. So I thought that I'm not the only one. So I'm sure there are stories which are similar than me. And there are stories which are never heard of. So, you know, women's health, mental health, menstrual health, because in the rural areas, we don't even have that help even now. So so I would say we've pretty much covered thousands of different topics till now, and not just the community part, but also how politics, you know, influence everything in our community now, being Hindu-Muslim issue all the time. And or Muslims being persecuted in India, even the Hindus being persecuted in you know, Pakistan or Bangladesh. So there are some very deep level issues that we are trying to tackle. But again, we receive a lot of good and bad feedback, because that's what the page is about. It's very, we are all about activism. And then going to the art, because there is a lot of activism through art as well. And then we try to showcase that through the content creators who are artists, who make music in terms of activism. And one of the artists, he's a good friend as well. His name is Madara. He's from India, but he talks about how the females are being treated in India, or how the minorities are being treated in India. Then there are artists in Pakistan, and the organizations like Aurat March, or you know, organizations in India, which is Girl Power Talk. And there's so many organizations that we've collaborated with over the years. And I think this is what keeps us going, and the conversations. And also we create our own content in terms of the conversation, which are not a part of our household, but they really are. Be it sex education, be it, you know, LGBTQIA community, how to come out to your parents, and, you know, just basic things that need to be a part of the household, but it isn't. So we try to start those conversations so that there are parents who follow us, and then there are children who follow us, I mean, teenagers. So there are a lot of layers to the page, and it's very difficult for me to just point out one thing, that this is the only thing we talk about. So Roshni, you know, she's been my friend for over a year, and we talk about things, we discuss about, you know, within our community, how can we be better allies to people who need our help. And that's all we've been doing till now.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think what it strikes me is that both of you are building communities and brands that are actually very different in terms of like which aspects of South Asian culture and South Asian representation, I should say, that we're focusing on, right? Because I think like there's the activism side where but both of them need to call attention to other South Asians to pay attention, right? I think that's the end goal. It's almost like on the South Asian nation side, we want to have attention called to some of these issues, to have these conversations, to drive home these points so that you can actually raise the awareness, the level of support needed for something like Audit March, for all the different things that are happening, to be able to call attention to the right sorts of charities, the right sorts of NGOs, organizations that are doing the hard work of finally starting to implement that change. And I think that is in some ways like such a harder hurdle, because to get humans to do anything altruistic is always really difficult, right? And to pay attention to things beyond just their own lives. And I think like Roshni, on your side, I think like a lot of it is about like helping artists grow, get the right airtime, or like help like the small brands, the small businesses grow, get the airtime, get like the level of support they need on that side. So like very different sides of the spectrum, but almost like I would assume that a lot of the difficulties and the challenges, it's all about like fighting for mindshare, right? In the audience's mind, and being able to like get the attention to the things that you guys want to get the attention to. So I'm kind of just wondering, like, what are some of the hurdles that you guys face in this arena? And has this journey gotten easier or harder over time?
So it's gotten, I would say, both. So with personally, like when I started the company with the boys, it was very difficult because we didn't know what we were doing. We were just all about entertainment. But my focus obviously was other things too. And I'm hoping we will be going that direction. And that's why that's how I connected with Divya. We connected on Little Brown Diary on Facebook, and we got on the phone, and I really loved her page. And I also started sharing some of her things. So it was good to collaborate with her on that level. But like the hurdles, obviously it's difficult because we're not a full-time company. It's just for fun. It's a side hustle. And finding good writers to go out there and pitch stories, it's difficult because there's so much content. Like, for instance, I'll give you an example. We started in 2010, and forgive me if I'm wrong on the date, Divya, you may know. It was the year when Damini was raped badly. And BBC had come out with a documentary, and it was a documentary about the guys who did this horrific thing. And we had written the article on our website thinking, okay, let's break the story. We had a lifestyle section. You know, I was kind of tired talking about entertainment all the time. So we were like, why should we not talk about this? This is really important. So we wrote the article, we posted the video. We back then, Twitter, it was not that big. I posted it on Facebook. Instagram was not that big as well. I posted it. I woke up the next morning. That post had 11,000 likes on my personal page. And I was like, this has never happened before. What is happening? And then somehow our article got shared on CNN, on Huffington Post. Like, it was an internal link because the site, the website crashed. My partner John called me and said, the website's gone down. I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, our website crashed because there was too many readers just for that one article. There were Ravi Shankar's daughter was sharing the article. There was Hollywood celebrities sharing the Urban Asian article. And then next thing you know, within 2 months, the cyber cell of India writes a letter to me saying we need to take the article down. So I was like,
not surprising.
Yeah, I know. She knows. It's all about politics at the end of the day. They don't want that video up. And it was a British lady who did this documentary. And I got in touch with her, and she's like, I'm so sorry you got the notice. After that, I freaked out. And then my dad said, do not write anything about politics. I don't want you to end up in like some weird cyber cell security in India, and then your website gets shut down. Because they do have capability of shutting your website down because of IP. So then I stopped writing about it. I really wish I could continue. But again, there's just so many red lines owning a website. You can write about a politician, and they will call you within the next day and send you a threat. This is the society we are living in, and it has to stop. So that article really leveled our website. We within that one article, everybody knew about Urban Asian. So it was kind of like, okay, everybody knows who we are now, because back then in the first 2 years, it's difficult to promote your website to like everyone globally. So then we started writing about entertainment, but those were the struggles. And it still is today. Like I get real scared when one of my writers is like, Roisin, can we write about this? And I'm like, wait a second, if we write about this, we're going to get a lot of backlash, but then it might end up going back to CyberCell. So we need to think about what we're going to write. So we are working on trying to change ways of what we want to write and what we don't want to write, just to be cautious. Because after that one experience, it was a nightmare. We had to put a disclaimer on the actual URL saying article has been taken down due to Indian copyright or blah, 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 whatever the case may be. Because if they come back to the website and they see the video up, they're going to shut us down and they may block Urban Asian in India. So we didn't want to take that risk. The hurdles that I face obviously is finding good content, you know, and you can write as much content as you want, but you got to make sure you track those eyeballs. And will those people actually go out and tell five other people about that issue? Like, for instance, South Asian Nation, they may talk about, you know, a COVID issue, promoting to get the oxygen tanks in India. But are those people really just going to look at that content and then go and tell people and help them? You know, like go promote, hey, let's go and find those tanks and give it to them. Looking at social media is fine, but you got to actually make the effort of making an action when you read something. And that's what we're seeing today, is that we're only seeing people read things. We're not seeing people go out and actually do those things.
Yeah. Well, I think conversion is always difficult, right? I think it's almost like the top of the funnel is just like creating all this awareness. And then like the funnel whittles down to like, you know, like it takes like thousands of outreach to get to like one piece of action from one person way down the line. So I think like that part is probably always difficult. And I know, Divya, I want to give you a chance to answer this question too, around like, what are some of the hurdles that you face in this arena? But I think like, I would just love to understand from you guys' perspective, before we jump into some of the hurdles that you're also facing, like where, like in an ideal state, what do you think is like the North Star for Urban Asian? And what do you think is the North Star for South Asian Nation? Like when you guys get to like, how are you going to be like, this is what we want to do. And this is like what we're meant to be.
Well, yeah, like I said, I want to get back into writing social issues without having to,
monitor yourself.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a very active person on Twitter. I mean, a lot of the celebrities know who me because of my father. You know, they see what I tweet. I have to be so careful in what I say. I mean, I've got family members who are well known in India and they're like, don't do this. Don't write this. I mean, my Masi calls me probably once a month and says, stay away from politics. I don't want you posting anything on there.
We'll come back to this particular question, because that I faced the same thing. I'm a much smaller brand than you guys are, but clearly I have no issue with having the hard conversations. Literally on my page, like the tagline is, we talk about stuff your mom and dad won't. And obviously to talk about stuff your mom and dad won't, we have to talk about it. But I face the same thing.
We do. And it's sad, because we, you know, I'm an 80s baby and it's time we change that conversation. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. We have to keep ourselves. I mean, I've been through a medical condition. I have epilepsy. A lot of people know this in the industry. I was overdosed when I was 12 from a pharmacist, and I went through a really bad state of mental health, and mental health is a big thing for me. And I really want to get involved more into mental health. But again, like you said, family. So it's difficult, but yeah, if to answer your question, I think the goal is to hurry up and change the conversation and start writing more articles about lifestyle, because I'm just at that point where it's just, it has to stop. The community needs to stop pinpointing what you're not allowed to talk about, what you're allowed to talk about. Like, who cares? You know, I mean, it's a conversation. If we don't talk about it, the next person tomorrow may do something crazy if we don't speak about it. And that's how I see it.
And I agree. I think things that, being from this community, the Desi community that we are in, we grew up with a lot of prejudice already. And now I'm an 80s baby as well. So now that we are we are trying to break those, you know, glass ceilings, things that we personally went through in our childhood, things that we wouldn't want if we have kids, we wouldn't want them to go through it. It all starts from the family first, right? So if, for example, my family, I grew up in a very poor household. Like I was very poor. So poor that you would hear, you know, one of those examples of kids who used to study under the street lamp. And I was one of those kids. So again, and growing up in that society and reaching all the way to the US, I've seen everything. And when I started South Asian Nation, I had my own inhibitions. I had my own thought processes that how am I going to even share this? Because I'm scared. I was scared. And people would look, you know, if anyone knows me, they know that how, you know, in the face I am, how strong I am. But honestly, deep inside, I was scared. But at the end of the day, I've always done things on my own terms. And the most could happen was my page would shut down. That's okay. You can always build another one. But again, Roshni has been dedicated to her business for way too long to, you know, let go of it all. And I understand that the pain that you, you know, a person has to go through for something you work so hard for, and then it shuts down because of some people did not like what you write about. It's ridiculous. And that's why when the hurdles that I face even now is how am I going to justify one community by talking about another one? It's such a gray area, and it's scary because I get threats. I get threats in my DMs all the time. I get threats openly, but I am the person who's nice but not too nice. So I give it back to the trolls and people who are just so full of hate. And I also don't block a lot of people because I want people to understand that there is some hate. Where is it coming from? Is it the politics or is it just the background that we grew up in? What are the things that we need to change? And that's why most of the time I don't delete the comments. I just leave them be. Because people need to see the other side of the society as well. It's not all hunky-dory rosy at all. So a lot goes on. It's an everyday struggle for us to look for content, creators, new creators. How are we going to find it? Google, Instagram, everywhere. Like, it's an everyday struggle for us to even find a great piece of content we could start or spark a conversation.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, Divya, and I'm glad that you're talking openly about some of this stuff because I think it's something that I struggle with a lot too, actually, on my page. So, like, we are primarily a podcast, but I do create a lot of content on Instagram as well, like, when the season is active. Like, between seasons, I take a little bit of a break because I find it to be very draining to create content all the time, as I'm sure you guys can also relate to. But like, I'm not a reposter page at all. All of the content is like completely original, at least for now. Maybe one day I'll run out of steam and start being like, okay, I'll like, you know, like repost and like also sort of like amplify some other content that I think is important to talk about. But I think one thing I struggle with is, sometimes there is that feeling, and I feel this way myself too. Like, if I am trying to call attention to one community's issue, like, someone else might comment being like, well, why didn't you talk about XYZ? And then I'll be like, okay, I could talk about XYZ. But then sometimes, and I don't know if this is the wrong approach, but like, sometimes I also feel like there's so much airtime already being given to a pretty like to an issue, and like that's good that like airtime is being given, but I'm trying to find things that people like, not just because I'm trying to be like, I'm creating unique content. To me, it's not about unique content. To me, it's about like, social media is an echo chamber. And like, I know, like, I literally, like, I don't even know if most of you know, but I work at Facebook Meta, like I work at the company, right? So I think like, I like, there is this hyper understanding of like the way social media works, like what the algorithm will find, what it'll promote. None of us know how the algorithm works at all. Like, let me just clarify. I have no insights. If I did, my page would already have like 100K followers or something. Like, it doesn't, right? Like, it's like very small. So it's not like I understand the ins and outs, but I have a very basic understanding of tech, right? And how like something would work in terms of why something might get attention and then continue to get attention, and how like just algorithms work in general, how models work. So I think like in my mind, I can never justify like calling attention to the same thing that everyone's calling attention to just for the sake of creating like-worthy content. Like if I wanted to like aim for likes, or if I wanted to aim for like just getting lots of followers with every new post, I'd probably continue to talk about the same things that everyone's talking about. But in my mind, one of the goals of my page is to talk about things that we're not talking about. That's why, like I told you guys, like I'm even talking about the things that your mom and dad won't talk about. Let's talk about the stuff that we're not talking about. So I think like I struggle with this, and I find myself also policing myself from the political point of view, because a lot of times I fundamentally very, very much disagree with like the politics of what's going on with India sometimes, right? And like, or like I would say like 90% of the time these days I disagree with what's going on with Indian politics. However, the reason I don't post it is not because I'm scared of posting it. I think it's because sometimes I start questioning myself, and I don't know if you guys have this thought process as well. Sometimes I start questioning myself that I think amongst South Asian countries, India gets disproportionate airtime anyway. So I think like we're more aware of the goods and the bads of like Indian politics more so than we're aware of the goods and the bads of other countries. And then I find myself wanting to do equal justice. Like if I'm hating on Indian politics, and which is a lot easier for me to do because I identify as Indian, then it feels like less attacky to me, because I'm like, well, you know, I'm from an Indian background. So like, it's okay for me to call out Indian shit because like I'm Indian. So like, you know, I'm not being a hater. But then I get like uncomfortable, like talking about like something like Hindu discrimination in Pakistan, whereas like I feel like it's very easy for me to talk about Muslim discrimination in India because I don't want that to happen, but I want it to be like very clear that like this is really bad, and I'm like, you know. But then I hesitate to talk about Hindu discrimination in Pakistan because I'm like, what if someone takes this the wrong way? What if someone thinks I'm like doing the wrong thing? But then because I'm creating a disbalance now where I will feel okay hating on India effectively but not hating on Pakistan, I just find myself like a little bit scared to do it. But I don't think that's the right approach either. So I'm not saying I'm correct or anything. This is just an open dialogue. And I think like what you guys were saying, or like specifically what you said, Divya, about not deleting the comments, I have the same approach, because the other thing that I dislike about social media is that it takes nuance out of the conversation completely. And I think every conversation has some nuance, right? So even when I posted, I made like a Raksha Bandhan post, for example, and I had used the term like in the Hindu mythology, like something about like Ram and the Ramayana, right? And someone like commented on the post saying, how dare you use the word Hindu mythology, because this is not a myth. Would you ever call the Bible or the Quran mythology? And I didn't delete that comment. And I was sort of like, okay, I guess it's a fair conversation. But I actually went into a rabbit hole where I even posted for my followers. Like I went to several bookstores in New York, and I started reading the Bhagavad Gita, the Upanishads, everything like for myself. Cause I'm like, is this mythology? Is that the right word? And then it took me several months to get back to this person actually, because I was like, I need this to be an informed conversation. I cannot deal with just having like a comment war on my comment feed. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to stand for that. And so I like went back to her and I was like, you're right that the Bible and the Quran are not referred to as myths, but also like no one has claimed that they are fact expressly. Like I think like a lot of like the people that practice these religions sort of like think of them as like just like tenets to learn from, pieces of literature to learn from. And I think that like the word that she said she prefers me using is epic, for example, instead of like mythology. And I was like, but also epic does not imply that it happened. So like actually what's happening is that you are using like a Sanskrit word like itihas, which like I think in Hindi nowadays directly translates to history. And now like translated to English, you're trying to say this is historical. But I think like that was like, you know, like it's like some of these nuances are getting lost in translation over things over years of time. And anyway, this was a huge tangent, but the whole point of the example was to sort of like really empathize with you guys, because I think the more you try to talk about bigger issues, the more people get so riled up and caught up in like small things, like the terminology, the word you use, the word choice. And then I find myself constantly being like, okay, can we focus on the big picture, please? Like what I'm trying to say is something different.
Oh yeah. I feel every word you just said, because there are, of course, every conversation has nuances. And it's almost so hard because there is a lot of whataboutry happening here and there. Because if we talk about, for example, how Muslims are being treated in India right now, people would talk about, well, what about my community? What about this community or that community? And it's always a never-ending, you know, quest for coming down to just one conversation. And sometimes people don't understand that it's hard for a content creator to highlight the issues which are not happening in the real time. Whatever happened in 90s or 80s, it's not happening now. So what's happening now is what we need to talk about. Whatever happened back in the time, it has nothing to do with, you know, what's happening in the current scenario.
Like the us and them finger pointing. Yeah. Like, but what about what they did in the 90s? And it's like, okay, well, that was like, I don't know, like before I was born. So can we talk about what's happening?
We have to move forward, basically, on real-time topics. And to add to that, like, you know, Divya knows who this guy is. His name is Stacy Punavala. He's become a good friend of mine, obviously, over time. And him and his wife, they keep in touch with me all the time. He's a very, very big political reporter in India, like probably one of the biggest. His wife comes from the Sonia Gandhi family. He always asked me, why are you not posting things like this, this, and this? I said, listen, I don't want to get trolled. I don't want to get death threats. I don't want to get this. He's like, you should. I'll give you content. And I said, wait, we'll wait on that topic when we do rebrand ourselves over time. But at this time, you know, if it's something to be related with mental health or the COVID campaign, then I'm all for amplifying all of that. And like, I was very proud to kind of team up with him during the period where COVID was happening. I mean, it was a really sad situation in what was happening in India, and it still is. Yeah. We've had three family members who have passed away. I'm sure Divya will tell you a little bit about her story as well. It was a difficult time, and I put all my entertainment, lifestyle, everything like out of the way just to focus on this campaign, on the COVID campaign, to amplify, hey, there's tanks here, there's tanks in this village, or there's this mandir that has 500 tanks of oxygen, try and see if we can get it delivered there. That happened for almost 7 months. I was doing that while I was working. And I'm very passionate about healthcare because I also work in the healthcare system as well. So for me, it was like very empowering, and I want to do more of that. Fine, if it's politics, it's okay, you know, but you know, those issues, like you guys were saying, like real-time issues, what's happening now, it's sad that people will comment. One bad comment can lead to 100 other bad comments.
Yeah, and it's just such a distraction. And I find like myself wondering why people can't focus on the issue at hand. But then I don't know if this is just me, but I also get like so caught up in self-doubt then, because then sometimes I'm like, I don't know, like, what if I don't have the full picture of what's actually happened right now? That's the other issue, right? Well, the things with right now is like, we do live in a world where, and I think we always have, I think people love to be like, these days, there's a lot of false news and misinformation. I think there always has been. I think if anything, we have more of a chance of hearing the other side of the story these days, because we don't just have like, you know, like government run newspapers or something as our only source of news, right? So I think like people say like these days it's really bad. I think it probably used to be worse in like pre-social media and pre like openness of the internet times. But anyway, my point is sometimes I get caught up wondering if I really do have the like both sides of the story, or if I am like, because I tend to be very what's like leftist in my more liberal in the type of content that I consume on both in the US and for South Asian politics. And so then I start wondering like, what if I'm reading biased content, you know? And then I just get so like scared of like what, like not scared for my health or for my safety or anything, thankfully, but more like I just don't want to do a disservice by putting out more misinformation. Then I just get like very worried that I'm not posting like accurate info.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's so important to find the accurate information and post it. Like during COVID time, there was just so much information. People were posting, you know, there's this many tanks here, you know, this is how much it's going to cost. But people were scamming people out of money.
People were scamming people.
It's disgusting. Yeah. So it's really important. Like you said, like deleting comments is not necessary. But if you're going to post something, keep the conversation going. yeah. but make it more, you know, positive, but not like throwing Hindi cuss words or anything like that. Cause we've yeah. seen it all, you know? I've seen it all. So,
and I think yeah. this is why yeah. it's actually so interesting, because we live in a world, and this was actually going to be one of my questions for you guys. We live in a world where I think our mediums of communication have gotten a lot more direct, like direct mm-hmm. to consumer, which like, I think in some ways is good, because like, and in some ways it's bad, because obviously you have like the trolls constantly on your page then, right? But I think that the one thing it affords us the opportunity to do is respond. Because I think like, imagine if you were a reporter back in the day, like writing news for like the Wall Street Journal or something, you have to wait until the next issue comes out and like, you know, like constantly like write up articles, publish them. I think now with things like a comment section, like it's a pain, like especially for the sizes of the page that you guys are running, like your pages are so big and your accounts across social media, not just Instagram, like Twitter, your website, etc. Your pages are all so big, your footprint is so big, but like you have the ability to respond to like each comment if you wanted to. Obviously that's kind of a pain, but at least it like keeps the dialogue going. So like you have a way to like talk to these people. And like, I think a lot of times a lot of people just cannot be reasoned with. I think we all have faced those types of people on our social media accounts where like you try to just like create a real dialogue with them and like have like a decent conversation, respond in a decent way. And they're just so determined to shut you down. They want to have the last word. They like will not listen to anything you say. But I think in general, there's like that aspect of social media. So do you guys feel like maybe on the one hand, like I know Roshni, you especially were talking about how you were so worried about your website being shut down. But do you feel like in the Instagram age, it's a little bit easier because like, it's not like your Instagram account can get shut down, or if it does get shut down, it's like a little bit easier to like migrate over to like another page and like sort of like get your followers back?
Well, yeah. So what we have started doing is like, say, for instance, if Divya is posting something about an activist campaign or whatever, we'll sometimes post it. But we've noticed if we post it, there's a whole bunch of bad comments. So because we're verified, we don't want to get shut down, or, you know, there's been times where it's been like people have sent bad threats to us. So what we do is we share it on the story, because that's less likely to get, you know, you're not getting comments, you're getting probably DMs most of the time. So we do reshare content, like if it's something that we want to amplify to our audiences. But like I said, you know, in the end, we want to start shifting the stories and posting more other things and see how it goes. Because look, the Damini campaign happened years ago. I can't remember if it was 2012, maybe Divya can correct me on that, but 2011, maybe it happened. But, you know, after that, I kind of went down a rabbit hole and said, the boys were like, we can't do this anymore. This is too scary. I mean, to get mm-hmm. a cybersecurity letter with a stamp of State of Government of India is very scary to get that email.
Of course.
Yeah. So, you know, the first thing you're thinking is, crap, I worked all these years to open up a website to communicate such issues to my audiences. And then all of a sudden, because of one little article, they're threatening us to take it down. So, you know, you got to put yourself, you got to think like, okay, how do I protect my own company and how do I protect it? Now that I have a little bit of connections in India with the politicians, and they've given me advice on what to do and what not to do over the last couple of months, like for instance, Thaseen and his wife, Monica, they were like, just Roshni, go for it. Don't worry about what they're going to say. You know, at the end of the day, they want to scare you. Don't let them scare mm-hmm. you, because mm-hmm. if you get scared, then you won't be able to tell those stories. Mm-hmm. You know, I look at those politicians on TV every day and I'm thinking, damn, they must be getting death threats all the time, 10 times worse than what we do, you know? Oh, yeah. So it's nice to talk to some of the journalists in India and say, listen, you can tell those stories. And they know that the NRIs in India, in America, want to know about these stories because it's important.
And you know how Roshni mentioned in the beginning, we are 9-to-5 people. This is our, you know, passion project. This is, I don't think so. I earn anything out of it, not even a single penny. And even if someone asked me how much do we charge for a post, I just don't charge anything, because for me, it's passion. For me, it's to, you know, push the envelope, push the new, you know, South Asian small businesses, you know, to get more views for them, to get more customers for them. But for me personally, I'm not worried about being paid for it. But for the future, though, I want to create a proper platform. Like, I want to create a website, but my job is crazy. It does not let me. And and then we have a life outside of this also, which we want to live in. We want to do things personally for us as well. And but for now, I am talking to groups within Chicago area, start creating events, start creating meetups, start creating, you know, just conversation when people could meet even in a park and have a conversation. And recently I had a, you know, interview with a Black woman who's also a counselor. And, you know, she talked about, like, she's blind Indian, which is, you know, she's married to an Indian guy. And the struggles that she faced from our community by her being Black, and, you know, and things that I can relate to, because any dark-skinned woman in our community, it goes through the same issue. And any minority in our community goes through the same issue. And so I'm trying to start something with her where Black and brown people could unite and, mm-hmm. you know, start more conversation for the change. The idea is to, I don't want to change. I don't think the social media changes anyone. But the idea is to educate people to at least think about it. And when they think about it, somewhere it hits them. There are people like me who, my family is a right wing, the whole family. My in-laws, yeah, my in-laws. I voted for Modi when he first ran for prime minister. Biggest mistake of my life. My whole family is absolute Modi lovers. And I am the one who is an absolute leftist. So that changed because when I moved here, I saw things differently. I was out of the circle of people who were just all about Modi. And I, even on my Facebook, when I go back to my memories, I have posts praising Modi, that this country does not deserve you, Prime Minister. I mean, I am super embarrassed by my own actions back in the past, but then I taught myself how to change and learn from different.
But Divya, I just want to pause you for a second, actually.
Yeah.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but the reason I'm interrupting is because I think it's important to call out that the way, and I don't think this is only with India. I think this is India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, the whole Desi, like, mediaverse, you know, I think the way it operates is like, it's like a machine. Like, I just think that, like, what I'm realizing is that, and I'm sure you guys know this, like, maybe from your own parents too. Like, I think when I see them watching, like, Indian news and the content that they're consuming, I'm like, how can you be buying this? It doesn't make sense to me. Like, you live in America now, but you're still somehow so bought into this, like, propaganda machine. And so on the one hand, I can't even, like, blame these people in India that are, like, sitting in on their Instagrams, like, writing me hateful comments about what I said on my post, because I think honestly to them, I must seem as otherworldly as they seem to me, right? In the same way that I think I'm like, you're completely brainwashed and crazy. I think like they probably think that about me because like the way the media is operated there and the way like everything is, if everything you're constantly reading all day long is one directional, how are you gonna have any chance to question anything that you're seeing? So I think like that's why, like, on the one hand, I'm like, I almost can't even like blame our parents' generation or like some of the older people, because I do get frustrated myself. I do, very frankly. But I think that it's because they've been raised in a society where, you know, everything's always one-sided. Like, I think this bothers me too. I'm like, if you guys don't find anyone else to blame, somehow you'll blame it on Pakistan. I like joke with my family about that.
Oh my gosh, like, yeah.
Like, somehow
what has Pakistan to do with all of this?
Like, like, it'll be like, Sushant Singh Rajput killed himself. Must be Pakistan. I'm like, what? Like,
it's literally ridiculous.
Like, somehow anything and everything will tie back to Pakistan. And I'm like, okay, maybe it's because for the longest time, those countries had such a like political like strife that I think And for the longest time, and there's lots of, I've done a whole episode about this also, actually, if you guys are interested. But in India, it was like, there's lots of books about this, right? Like politics before television, et cetera. For the longest time, all the television content in India was also run by the government. So I think it was like nationalized, hence like everything our parents' generation grew up with is nonstop governmental propaganda. And I think India is, at least India, and I really do think it's the same case with Pakistan and Bangladesh. That's why I don't say that this is only an India problem. I think this is laziness in general. I think our governments very much control the narrative on, or like our cultures, governments control the narrative on what you should or shouldn't think. And I just really think our parents' generation has never been exposed to thinking outside the box when it comes to India, because I think on some level they are also facing like a cognitive dissonance, because whenever I try to have some of these conversations with my parents, they're always like, we grew up in India, we know what it's like, we knew when like a president was a Muslim person, so how can you say that like India discriminates against Muslims? And I'm like, that's because the India you grew up in no longer exists. Like, you've been living here for like 40 years now, so why are you going to keep giving me examples of things that happened like, you know, like 40 years ago? So on the one hand, I almost like can't even blame them, is all I'm saying. So that's why I was like, parents?
I said, do we have the same parents?
I think we all had the same parents in this regard. Oh. Like, I always like, I'm like, I love how you guys are anti-Trump but pro-Modi. I don't get it. But like,
oh my God, that's exactly what I said. I even wrote it on my Facebook. Like, how can you hate Trump and love Modi?
Yeah. It
doesn't make sense. They're best friends.
They are best friends. It's ridiculous. You know, I mean, you know, to say that, you know, I totally agree with both of you. I've had this conversation considering my father was a radio host, and he was born with the mic. He cannot get rid of his mic. He loves speaking. He's a chatterbox, but he speaks very Shuddh Hindi. He grew up in India. He grew up in Gujarat, and he is crazy about Modi. Like, I mean, I was offered to go host Republic TV reached out to me a few years ago when Modi and Trump were meeting in Texas. And the PR company messaged me and said, why don't you come and help us with the PR and also maybe do some hosting or, you know, some events for us during the time that they're there. I called my dad and I said, Dad, they have invited me to this Modi event and I really don't know crap about politics. Like, I really don't. I didn't take history of India. So I'm not going to go because I don't have that background. He was like, go for Republic TV. I want you to go. It'll be a good experience. I was like, how do you expect me to go, Dad, when I don't know crap? I don't want to say the wrong thing on TV and then I get trolled and death threats and all this mumbo jumbo. He's like, maybe I'll go. I go, no, you're not going at all. He wanted to go because he wanted to meet Modi, because they are fanatics. They are, my husband's family, they're huge fanatics. I mean, my father and my husband's family, when they get on the phone, it's 3-hour calls just about Modi.
Oh, you gotta hand it to Modi and the BJP. I'm like, these people are wickedly good at PR. I have never seen anything like this.
I think they understand how Indian psyche works. And even though I used to follow Modi, as in I voted for him. So the way my family thinks it, because they're still there. I still have my home in Delhi and my whole family lives there. One of the things that say that, oh, you just see this in the news. It doesn't happen here. How does it not happen here? Because I grew up in India. 30 years, I lived there. I was born there. Places I used to, you know, I grew up in are being burned, or the mosque. I used to listen to Azan every morning. I used to wake up to Azan. The same mosque has been vandalized or attacked and people are not, you know, able to pray there. That's not right. Because for me, whenever somebody, you know, talks about, every time I post about politics, there is someone from homeland talks about diaspora or leeches. And I always remind my followers, I am not diaspora. I am an Indian citizen. I was born there. I know everything. I am, and I moved here in my 30s. So it doesn't matter what you say, because I've seen it all. Like, I have experienced it. So that doesn't change the fact. And then talking about, you know, my family supporting Modi, even after the disaster, the COVID was last year. I lost my brother to COVID. And he was 38. Yeah. He was only 38. Yeah. And, you know, my family was like, oh my gosh, the government didn't do anything. And the government was, you know, they should have prepared better. And now, again, the elections are happening and my family is happy to vote for him. I have no idea if my family even have conscience to even vote for a person or the government who has always been a disaster or nothing. The gas prices are going up. There is no remorse for anyone. There is more violence everywhere. I mean, there Hindu-Muslim issues were always there. Hindu-Muslim, Sikh, Dalit issues were always there, but now it's even more rampant because of social media. So, and now because it's a very Hindutva government, it's gone haywire. It's gone wild out in India. People are openly killing each other. People are openly, you know, calling out for rapes of Muslim girls, which is absolutely horrendous. I grew up in that India. Even though I saw the, you know, rift between two communities, two religions, but there has never been a way, or maybe because social media wasn't there that time, so it wasn't televised then. Maybe it was always there. These tensions were always there. The government and the social media is a disastrous mix of what they've created, what India looks like right now. And on international platforms, everyone is talking about it, how Modi has created this Hindutva government, which is absolutely, it's just how Trump was elected, right? People were racist, but then they were not as crazy that they would go on January 6th and freaking, you know, attack the, you know, whatever building the most powerful building in America. So I feel like it's a lot, the brainwashing and using our religion, which is really not Hindutva, calling Hinduism as equal to Hindutva is again huge problem in our community. And all of this is being very well used by the PR companies that BJP owns. And it's until unless Modi government is in power, it's not going to help on the international platforms, and especially for India and the neighbors of India as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think I know we've diverged a little bit from where we...
No, it's fine.
No, but I think this is a really important conversation to have, because I think that the thing that we also don't talk about, because things always get lost, is how do we even have difficult conversations, right? So I really appreciate that this episode has like sort of blossomed into more like, how are we going to use our platforms to have difficult conversations? Because I think that there's not enough of that out there, frankly. There is and there isn't. There's a lot of like divisive content out there, I will say, but like, I think it's like draining, because it's like, every time you open Instagram, you're like, oh my God, the world sucks. Everything sucks. The world is burning. And then on the other hand, you're like, how do I allocate my attention to all the different things that matter? On the one hand, there's like Ukraine, then like we're forgetting about like Israel and Palestine, and then you like hear about like, you know, like all the problems with places like the South Asian countries and like what's going on there, and you're always like, there's constantly a world crisis happening, but it always fits into like the 2x2 square on Instagram. And it's like, every problem has the same level of space then, because it's like, whether it's like a really big problem or a really small problem, it fits into a 2x2 square on Instagram, right? So it's kind of just like, it's very confusing, I think. And that's like one of the things that I wanted to ask you about, because I told you guys, it's a double-edged sword. It's like, on the one hand, you can now call attention to all these things that you guys probably like would never have been able to gather the audience for beforehand. And on the other, there's some very real costs.
Like I said, we have Crown the Brown section on our website, which is run by a friend of ours in South Africa. And we dedicated her page to Urban Asian so she can write articles about what's happening in the South African continent, because there's a lot of stories. Like Divya was saying, there's a huge Indian population in Africa. My parents were born in Kenya. So those stories are not being told. And so I let her go out and tell those stories. She's a huge activist on colorism, because obviously she's a supersized model as well. So I let her enjoy taking those stories to the next level and posting them. So I'm glad we now finally have tools where we can utilize to show other readers, hey, this is what's happening in this little pocket of Madagascar or in South Africa, wherever they may be. You know, I used to say, like one time I told Jay Sean this and he laughed. He goes, you never know if there's going to be a Justin Bieber in a little tiny island with like 500 people. You may want to cover them. And he was like, yeah, you're right. There's so much talent out there. You just don't know where it's going to pop up. Yeah. And he was laughing. He was like, yeah, there could be a Jay Sean of like a Jay Sean version of me, but you know, not that good looking, but really good. So, you know, that's his humor. He likes to, you know, be really funny. But my point is that there's pockets in every, like everywhere, there's a story to be told.
Yeah.
And I just hope more people read about those stories, because it will change their mindset, like how they're thinking. And it could be a good story, it could be a bad story. But, you know, it was difficult pre-TikTok and Facebook and Twitter and all that. We had Friendster and MySpace. MySpace was just for music. Friendster was just like making connections with friends and possibly finding your future husband. So, you know, it was difficult, but we made it through.
Yeah. And I think like what I was also finding interesting while you were talking, Roshni, about like how it's important to start telling all these stories, like, because I don't even think I'm able to do that good of a job with telling stories that are non-UK US. I think like they are like the most that I can tell, frankly, as like one person who has like basically is just trying to source stories. And the only reason I can even accommodate the UK a little bit is because I actually live there. So I feel like after living there, I've developed a lot more of a sense of like what UK Browns are like, frankly. And it, like, it blew my mind how different they are to US Brown people. But yeah, I mean, like,
totally.
Okay, we need to like tell these stories. And so that's why, like, going back to what you guys were talking about, I think I just find it interesting that like there's such a struggle. I'm realizing that this struggle is like common to all of our accounts and probably every account on social media, where we want to do the right thing and like amplify the right content, but it's also so difficult to like A, generate that content, and B, get the visibility it deserves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to also add to that, you know, I forgot to mention, when we started the website or the social media platform, it was growing. There was a lot of Bollywood content. And then a lot of the celebrities in India started seeing, there was a time where we were posting about women empowerment, like supersized models, like colorism, those things. And there were a few Bollywood actors who were like, oh, this is so cool. We don't know that this is happening in America. There are stories at Urban Asian where we've covered where celebrities in India were like, this is a really cool story. We've never seen this before. You know, we had two big celebrities that follow us, and they were actually resharing some of our content, which I was, and it wasn't like Bollywood like related. It was lifestyle related, about women empowerment and making sure that women get what they need. And he shared it, and I messaged him, and he was like, Roshni, this is, you guys should post more of this. I said, okay, this is interesting. Like, I see that a big famous person is resharing a post, which is not related to the male, you know, it's not a male post, it's a female post. And his girlfriend, who's also a big celebrity, was like, Roshni, you should also start posting stuff like this, because, you know, we may be in the limelight all the time, but we like to see what's really happening in the United States. So that kind of made me think, wow, okay, someone is seeing it. At least one person is seeing it. And if that one person is sharing it and they have like 10 million followers, his fans are going to see it. They're going to tap on it, and they'll be like, oh, wow, this is a real cool story. And it wasn't my content. It was a repost. And that's what we want to do. We want to tell those stories, because Divya's audience may be different than mine. And if we cross share with you, it could be empowering, you know, like, again, the COVID campaign that we did. It's really important to tell these stories. So I'm hoping for the future, that it's our goal is to go going forward is to start collaborating with more people, because that is my goal. I mean, 10 years in the run, I definitely want to change up what we're doing. And it's difficult because, again, full-time job, part-time Urban Asian, then you got your personal life, and I'm also married. So it's like four jobs.
Well, you took the question out of my mouth, Roshni. I was just going to say, to wrap up, I guess, like, what are you guys hoping for your brand? So I know you just mentioned collabs. Unless there's like anything else to add before we go to Divya.
Thanks so much. I mean, I think I really hope in the future more of us get to cross collaborate. There's a lot of great things happening at our company. We are launching an Urban Asian app very soon, hopefully once it gets approved. And this is an app just for fun for the young generation, just to have like cool games and cool quizzes. My mom had a dream where she wanted, her name is Niru, and she was always telling me, why don't you have Game Corner on your website where kids can learn about certain things, like maybe like a letter of the day. And you know, my parents are really motivating. They give me ideas, and I told the boys and they're like, let's do it. So hopefully we'll be able to do that in the long run in the future. But yeah, lots more to come. And looking forward to collaborating with more people in the South Asian space.
That's awesome. That sounds fun.
Yeah, I think for me, one of my main goals is to build up the website finally, whenever I should get some time, take some time out for it. Like I told you before, I don't monetize on the content. But I feel like by monetizing, it will give me a little bit of freedom to support the organizations that I believe in and also people believe in. So by building the website, will only be fair to, you know, monetize from it, not from just my Instagram page. And then moving forward, also we have this small creative Desi group in Chicago, and we want to build that. We want to, you know, add more people to it. We want to do more meetups, and just help this community meet at a common ground, where we can share ideas, create things for other people, fundraise for, you know, different organizations, and start from there. You know, I also want to start doing events, because I've been into PR and events back in India. And now I work with Amazon, so I also handle the events there too. So it's, I think I feel like it's my calling for just to start, events in Chicago area, and then take it nationally. And also whenever I visit India, I also want to meet people there, because I know so many content creators and also organizations who would like to start, just conversations around issues that are happening, be it women's health or men's health or mental health or just, you know, overall health. And apart from that, just, you know, the crisis that people, you know, continue to face. So there are so many different avenues that I want to get into, but again, I'm the only person who has to do all that hard work. But this year, I think if, you know, things go well with COVID, we'll start doing things more in person, and build it from there. Basically, there's nothing set in stone, but again, there is some vision there.
Awesome. Okay. Well, given that this is all of our side hustle, may our goals and aspirations for the future come true. I'm inundated with some of the same questions, concerns, like in aspirations as you guys. So hopefully our own pages and all the work that we want to do with them and the conversations we want to have can continue to thrive in the future. Thank you guys so much for being on the podcast. It was really exciting having this conversation, and I found it to be refreshing, because I think one of the things we don't talk about enough is how to have difficult conversations. So I think that, and frankly, I also don't think, like, on some level, this is like me calling out all consumers of content on Instagram. I think people don't appreciate how hard it is for the creator of the page, the account holder, to really put themselves out there to share the content that they believe in and engage in that dialogue. So I think like this is for everyone. Like this is from three creators, basically. We're all saying that we want to be there to have the hard conversations, but it is hard. And it's just almost like that term, fighting the good fight. We'll just all keep fighting the good fight, but it's going to be a slow process. So yeah. Absolutely. So yeah, thank you both so much.
No, thank you, it was great. Thanks.
Yeah, I enjoyed this topic a lot more.
I'm glad. So as we wrap up, Roshni, tell our followers where they can follow you and Urban Agent.
So we are on all social media platforms at Urban Agent. Is our handle name, and urbanasian.com is our website. And my personal page is Ms. Roshni on all social medias as well.
And Divya, what about you?
Well, you can follow me on South Asian Nation. That's all I have for you guys for now, but there's more coming.
Awesome. Cool. And thanks everyone for listening. Thank you for being a loyal listener. We are now on season 4, which I'm very excited about. So please continue to follow the podcast at Cultured or Nah. Please tell all your friends about us, retweet us, share us, text your friends, whatever you want to do, email them, whatever, no judgment. And please continue to follow me personally at Shabnam Gulati. Thanks for listening.